Towards this hour, Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says those responsible for Wednesday's deadly terrorist attack on an Iranian shrine will receive punishment for their crime. Israeli forces fatally shoot a Palestinian man and injure two others at a checkpoint near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. And Russia files a complaint with the UN Security Council demanding an international probe into the United States' military biological activities in Ukraine. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Iran's leader says those responsible for the terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the southern city of Shiraz will undoubtedly be punished for what they've done. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said firm action must be taken to identify and tackle the root causes of such heinous crimes. The leader said all people and entities in the country are responsible in the face of seditious acts by the enemy. And the traitors or ignorant stooges. He advised everyone to stay united against those undermining security and disrespecting sanctities. Separately, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said recent riots in the country paved the way for the terrorist attack in Shiraz.
These riots paved the way for terrorist attacks. They came to Shah Cheragh Mausoleum and sprayed with bullets innocent people who were worshipping God. The ground for such terrorist attacks was prepared by riots.
Raisi also said the riots have their roots in the fact that Iran's adversaries have failed to disrupt its progress through other means. He said the enemies do not want Iran to develop and prosper. The attack on the holy shrine of Shah Cheragh left at least 15 people dead, including women and children. Over 24 people have also been injured. The Daesh Takfiri terrorist group has claimed responsibility. Officials say the 30-year-old assailant has been wounded and is now in custody. 3 days of public mourning have been announced in Fars province. Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajara, says a certain process to demonize Iran is taking place, normalizing the use of violence against supporters of the Islamic Republic. Take a listen.
The Iranian nation, who has been target of terrorism from the time of the revolution, and target of atrocities, be it committed by Saddam or by others. Iran has been targeted over and over, and we are facing right now a situation that the demonization process, which is taking place against Iran day in, day out, it really is unprecedented, and it does lead to violence being unleashed. Not just in Iran, but elsewhere. I mean, we saw in streets of Europe, mosques being attacked, sort of people who are gathering for Arbaeen being attacked, people's hijabs being forcibly removed, and even, you know, 5 police officers being put in hospital with broken bones. And similar thing has happened in France and elsewhere. So really this encouragement of violence against Iran and in some ways Islamophobic nature of it, it's very worrying, and it goes beyond what is happening to Iranians. It actually has got sort of implication for all Muslims, because if Iranian so-called opposition, if they go and burn Quran, remove people's hijab, attack mosque with sort of bottles of beer and wine, then, you know, the racist is a license for racists to come out and unleash their Islamophobia.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank despite facing condemnations over their deadly aggressions in the occupied territories. 47-year-old Ahmad Abu Rashid was fatally shot in his head and chest at an Israeli checkpoint south of the city of Nablus. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 2 others were critically injured in the Israeli attack. In a statement, the Israeli military claims its forces shot at 2 suspected vehicles after a passing car opened fire at the checkpoint. But the statement does not mention any casualties among troops. Israel has stepped up its crackdown across the occupied territories in recent months under different pretexts. More than 120 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank since the start of this year. Israeli forces have killed 46 Palestinian children this year so far. That's according to a report by Defense for Children International, an NGO working to promote and protect the rights of Palestinian children. The NGO says it has collected evidence that shows the regime's forces use lethal forces against Palestinian children. The organization says the use of such force was unjustified and may amount to extrajudicial or willful killings. It says that a surge in Israeli raids across the occupied territories has resulted in a spike in child casualties. A separate report by the Palestinian Prisoner Society says the Israeli regime has detained over 125 Palestinian women this year alone. More than 7,000 Palestinians are reportedly languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers, with many of them being held without charge or any trial. After more than a decade of on-off indirect talks, Lebanon and Israel have signed a U.S.-mediated deal to end their maritime dispute. The agreement will allow Lebanon to exploit its own natural resources. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has more in this report.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S.-brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the UN at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. The Hezbollah leader said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in his statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Mariam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Russia says it has filed a complaint with the UN Security Council demanding an international probe into the U.S.'s military biological activities in Ukraine. In a statement, the foreign ministry said Moscow has obtained new evidence and material that show Washington is developing biological weapons in Ukraine. The accusation comes amid escalating tensions between Russia and the West. Shortly after the start of the war in Ukraine, Russia accused the U.S. of funding biological research in Ukraine with the aim of spreading deadly infectious agents. Both Washington and Kiev, however, denied such claim, with the U.S. calling it pure fabrication. Previously, Russia had also accused the U.S. of secretly carrying out biological experiments in a lab in Georgia. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the West's undivided dominance of world affairs is coming to an end.
The historical period of undivided dominance of the West in world affairs is coming to an end. The unipolar world is becoming a thing of the past. The Western ideologists and politicians insisted and told the whole world there is no alternative to democracy. They mean the Western so-called liberal model of democracy. All other versions and forms of people's power they arrogantly dismissed. They have adopted this type of behavior long ago, since the colonial era.
Putin made the remarks at a session of the Valdai Discussion Club at Moscow-based think tank. He said the decade ahead could be the most dangerous, unpredictable, and, at the same time, important one since the end of the World War II. The Russian president said the Ukraine war is only part of the, quote, tectonic shifts in the entire world order. Putin said the West and globalization to ensure its dominance in the world. The Russian president said when other nations began to benefit from the globalization, however, the Western countries promptly changed many rules or made them null and void. As the debate heats up over the so-called dirty bomb allegations, the UN's nuclear watchdog says it will launch an independent investigation into Russia's claims next week. Head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said the probe will be done at two Ukrainian sites. He said inspectors would work to detect any diversion of nuclear material under safeguards, any undeclared production or processing of nuclear material. Earlier, Moscow accused Kiev of planning to use the radioactive device laced with the toxic nuclear material against Russian troops in Ukraine. It also warned that such act could raise the risk of a conflict in the world and the region. Kiev and its Western backers, however, denied the allegations, saying Russia is setting a pretext for using nukes in the war. Hard-pressed mortgage holders in the Eurozone receive more bad news as the European Central Bank raises interest rates by 75 basis points. As energy sanctions against Russia continue to backfire, some economists warn the EU could be heading for a deep recession. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Many millions of people living across the 27-nation EU are struggling to survive. Brussels resident Jefferson Araujo has endured two rent increases since March. His landlord says her mortgage is going up, and so a further rent hike is needed.
You go to the market, you cannot buy anything anymore because the price is too high. And I'm thinking maybe to leave Brussels because I'm working in a hotel 10 hours a day. Like sometimes I have just one day off a week.
In an attempt to bring down soaring inflation, the European Central Bank, which manages the euro, has announced interest rates are going up by a further 75 basis points. That represents a huge increase for people repaying home loans. The economic outlook could get even worse, the ECB warns.
Confidence could deteriorate further, and supply-side constraints could worsen again. Energy and food costs could also remain persistently higher than expected.
Some EU leaders have warned the ECB that increasing interest rates so aggressively could push the Eurozone into a deep recession. Higher rates impede business expansion and employment. Charities fighting social injustice often point out all of those taking the decisions that lead to higher inflation and interest rates are insulated from the impact simply because they are the richest individuals in society. Critics say the EU's move to cut out Russia's cheap gas over the war in Ukraine is backfiring. Despite this, a ninth round of sanctions against Moscow is being prepared.
The Commission and the EES are obviously constantly working in the context of the sanctions on making sure that we are ready should there be a need for further sanctions.
Peace seems to be a dirty word in Western capitals. This as the US weapons and energy sectors make enormous profits, while ordinary EU citizens pay a very high price. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In Italy, one person is killed and four others injured in a stabbing attack at a supermarket near the city of Milan. A supermarket employee succumbed to his injuries on the way to hospital. Three of four injured are said to be in critical condition. Police have arrested a 46-year-old man who grabbed a knife from a supermarket shelf and went on a stabbing spree. Authorities have ruled out a terrorist motive behind the attack. They say the perpetrator has shown signs of being psychologically unstable. Diesel shortages in the United States are spreading along the East Coast amid a ban on imports from Russia. There are now fears over a further surge in prices for the fuel as consumers brace for winter. Suppliers have advised customers to give a 72-hour notice for their orders to avoid having to pay above market prices.
The war in Ukraine and a series of interlinked crises across the globe have triggered concerns about energy supplies worldwide. Countries are now beginning to look into contingency plans to avert or overcome possible energy crises. And the United States is no exception. Experts have now sounded the alarm bells over possible blackouts in the Northeast and New England regions. Those areas have already begun rationing heating oil as stockpiles slump by 70%. The rationing measures are imposed on consumers, which limit the amount of heating oil they can purchase. It's reported that the U.S. Northeast is so short on heating oil that the fuel used to power home furnaces is being rationed even before the start of winter. The measures have highlighted the extreme fuel tightness in those regions. Scarcity and high costs have triggered gloomy prospects for the coming months. Wholesale heating oil in New York Harbor averaged $4.09 a gallon, compared with $2.46 at the same time a year ago. The emergency situation has prompted many consumers to opt for partial fills. Some say they will not turn on the heat until they absolutely have to. Apart from that, there are warnings that in case of a severe cold spell and amid global gas market volatility, consumers could face blackouts due to not enough gas for power generation.
Diesel supplies in New England, the region most reliant on distillate fuels for heating, have reportedly dwindled to about one-third of normal levels this time of the year. The shortage has also put the United States at risk of further spikes in prices if there is a supply disruption. The rising heating oil prices have now pushed consumers to turn to liquefied natural gas or LNG. But due to the energy crisis in Europe, LNG prices are already sky high and will likely move higher as winter comes. Just days ahead of a presidential runoff in Brazil, leftist candidate Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has slightly widened his lead against his far-right rival, incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. An opinion poll published by Atlas Intel shows Lula now has 52.4% of voter support against 46% for Bolsonaro. Another poll by Datafolha says Lula has gained 1 percentage point, maintaining 49% support as Bolsonaro has slipped 1 point to 44% in a week. The first round of the presidential election was held on October 2nd. 11 candidates competed for the top executive post, with Lula and Bolsonaro being the main contenders. But none managed to pass the 50% margin. Lula secured 48% of the ballots against 43% for Bolsonaro. The two contenders are set to square off on Sunday.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Democracy is under threat in the U.S. Even the midterm elections could leave democracy weaker ahead of the 2024 presidential race. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Guardian wrote, Till sat out the 2020 election but appears to have been re-energized by the COVID-19 pandemic. Trump's claim of a stolen presidential election and the January 6th insurrection. Addressing a NatCon convention this time last year, he denounced the incredible derangement of various forms of thought, political life, scientific life, and the sense-making machinery generally in the U.S. Liberal democracy, in his view, had turned the United States government into a dissent-squashing ministry of truth working toward a homogenizing, brain-dead, one-world state, a problem to which only right-wing nationalism could provide an all-important corrective. We are close to a total moment, a little dog pulling aside the curtain on the holy holies only to find there is nobody there, he told the crowd, adding, We always think of democracy as a good thing, but where do you shift from the wisdom of crowds to the madness of crowds? When does it become a bomb, a racket, a totalitarian lie? Such views might be easy to write off as the eccentricities of a wealthy man, but for the money that Till has spent buying influence and supporting like-minded candidates, thanks in large part to a campaign financing system that, while still capping contributions to individual campaigns, allows unlimited funding of nominally outside groups and political action committees. Campaign finance experts see Till as a symptom of a much broader problem, a political environment in which a small group of mega donors are growing ever bolder in the size of the checks they write, and the erosion of any nominal firewall between the war chest run by candidates and the funds controlled by outside groups dedicated to their success. Chi-Sun Lee, an expert on campaign finance who directs the Brennan Center's elections and government program at New York University, said, It does seem to be getting worse. Outside spending in this federal midterm cycle is more than double the last midterm cycle. Since Citizens United, just 12 mega donors, 8 of them billionaires, have paid $1 out of every 13 spent in federal elections. And now we are seeing a troubling new trend that some mega donors are sponsoring campaigns that attack the fundamentals of democracy itself. Till's spending has been dwarfed this year by at least three other mega donors. Soros, $128 million to the Democrats. Shipping products tycoon Richard Olhain, $53 million to Republicans. And hedge fund manager Kenneth Griffin, $50 million to Republicans. And Till has some way to go to match the consistent giving cycle after cycle of the Koch brothers or Sheldon Adelson, the late Las Vegas casino magnate. Many experts also believe the attack on democracy began long before it became as explicit as Till has made it, because the whole point of funneling large amounts of money into the political system is to sway policy away from the will of the majority to the narrow interests of the donors and their friends. This ability to control the policy agenda drives spending even more than the desire to see specific candidates win, says Harvard law professor Lawrence Lessig, whose 2011 book Republic, lost offers, an enduringly devastating analysis of the relationship between money and political influence. And the spending is likely only to increase. You're going to see much, much bigger individual contributions and an acceleration of contributions to super PACs, like the ones established to support Vance and Masters, Lessig said, adding, the candidates and the super PACs can't coordinate on spending, but that doesn't mean they can't coordinate on the fundraising, since the super PACs are outspending candidates by orders of magnitude. It's all a dance to flush money into super PACs. They basically call the shots, and politicians can get anything through that they oppose. Less than a month from the election day, both Vance and Masters are trailing their Democratic opponents in the polls, Vance by less than Masters. But Lessig says it would be wrong to conclude Thiel or any of the other mega donors are wasting their money. If you're a candidate and you know $10 million is going to come in against you on a particular issue, you are going to bend to avoid the effect of that money, whether or not it's going to decide the race. If you're someone who would otherwise be a strong climate activist, but you know that if you mention a carbon tax, $1 million will drop from some anti-carbon tax super PAC, you won't talk about it, he said. Thiel's bid to overthrow the system, in other words, goes well beyond his ability to determine which party controls the Senate next year. The money will solidify the notion that the country is being run by psychopaths, at least among a hardcore of Republican voters, analysts warn, and will further harden the ideological battle lines that have split the country in two and made common ground ever harder to find. It also brings the extreme opinions of Nat Confeder into the mainstream, making it easier for radical Republican candidates to run and win in future races, they say. We are at a crisis point here. Not so much because the ideas are hard to defeat, but we don't have a context in which to defeat them, Lessig said, adding, the fact that the same number of people believed the election was stolen as believed it on January 6 is a profound indictment of the information ecology in America. The Brennan Center believes there are ways of improving the system, at least at the state and local level, and points to efforts in both red and blue states to close certain loopholes and introduce public financing models to rein in the influence of the mega donors. Lee said she would also like to see federal legislation to build a meaningful firewall between campaign funds and super PACs. She said the legislation exists, and it would be a constitutional improvement even under the Citizens United ruling. All we need is the political will to act.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and here is a short and sweet saying worth pondering upon from Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible heir of the Prophet of Islam. Reasonless laughter is a sign of ignorance.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, factors of disclosing secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the factors of disclosing the secrets of others. We know that Islam gives importance to the secrets and it stops us from spying someone. The only case which is allowed is where you need to prevent your country, your state from the enemies. But otherwise, it is forbidden to spy on the believers, to go after them. Now, there are some factors which are causes of disclosing the secrets amongst the people. And obviously, we must be careful when we are living, when we are socializing with the people. The first factor is when someone is so much talkative. If someone is so much talkative, obviously, he talks about everything. He loves to talk and always, he can never be like, you know, sit silent. So he always wants something to talk about. And therefore, if he knows a secret, we generally have seen that such people, because of their being talkative, they have leaked the secrets of the others. And it was resulted the humiliation of the others. So therefore, we must avoid such people. We must avoid telling the secrets to such people who are so much talkative. The second factor is when someone is inferiority complex, when someone is in inferiority complex or he has the inferiority complex. If someone has such a complex, obviously, then because he lacks something, on the other hand, he knew about the secrets of the other, therefore he wants to use those secrets for himself. When someone is sitting somewhere and he is feeling inferiority, then obviously what they do is they start leaking the secrets of the others. And this is not good. So we must avoid these things, inshallah. ¶¶ Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the factors of leaking the secrets of the others. So we mentioned a couple of factors. Now, we want to talk about other factors. One of the factors can be that when someone is angry upon someone and he is so much, we can say like he is emotional. So in those emotions and being angry upon someone, this can cause the leak of a secret that we know from someone. Maybe we want to get empty from what we have, or maybe like the anger that we have, and it is so much that in that anger we might leak. Therefore, we must avoid such things. The very important thing in today's world, the time in which we are living, that is the obviously the communication equipments. These communication equipments, I don't know, the applications, mobile phone, the tablet, maybe the wireless things that we have, all these things are such things that can cause the leak of some, you know, secrets. Even if I'm living in my personal life, maybe I'm sharing my pictures on the Instagram to my family, maybe my Facebook is open, and I have just my family members added on the Facebook. But since it is open, we have seen that it has been showed in different programs. It has been showed on the TV, on the newspaper, maybe over the internet. It is said that there are some people, there are some bad people that who are after your data, and they can access to your computer, to your mobile phone, to your tablet, to your phone, and they're recording your personal pictures, maybe. They're recording your life, they're recording the things that you do not want, and later they're using it against you. Therefore, we must be careful when we are using these communication tools in our life, that we limit the use of them. Maybe when we are in the family, we leave the phone on a side. Maybe when we are on the laptop, so we take care of covering the camera, maybe, or the other things. Obviously, there are different ways the people know it better. But obviously, in today's world, it is very important to be careful if we want to have a peaceful life, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, "Children, don't embarrass me."
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on 2 major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and, you know, the subjects. And and of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a 3-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A
Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out its instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers which was not very useful for our restaurants.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats.
A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Irshan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Irshan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Irshan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Human Rights Watch says the Zionist regime of Israel used bombs and precision-guided missiles made by the United States for its attack on the people of Gaza in August and did not issue a warning message to the civilian population of the Gaza Strip. This is just one example of the Israeli regime's crimes against innocent Palestinians. Almost all human rights institutions and also Amnesty International believes the Zionist regime has committed war crimes in the enclave. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of Al Jazeera has more on this story. Amnesty International has called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to investigate possible war crimes following the unlawful attacks committed during the Israeli regime's deadly assault on the Gaza Strip last August. Amnesty International, in a new report released on Tuesday, 25th of October, says that investigating the circumstances around three specific attacks on civilians by Israeli forces who boasted of the precision of their attacks on Gaza last August. Amnesty International says the victims of Israel's so-called precise attacks included a four-year-old Palestinian child, a teenager visiting his mother's grave, and a fine arts student martyred by Israeli tank fire while at home drinking tea with her mother. Agnes Callamard, Amnesty International Secretary General, said in a statement accompanying the report, "Israel's latest offensive on Gaza lasted only 3 days, but that was ample time to unleash fresh trauma and destruction on the besieged population of the enclave." Callamard said, "The three deadly attacks we examined must be investigated as war crimes. All victims of unlawful attacks and their families deserve justice and reparations." Agnes Callamard added, "The August onslaught by Israeli military was only the most recent example of indiscriminate violence against the dominated, oppressed and segregated population of the Gaza Strip, which has suffered under years of illegal blockade of the territory." She said, as well as investigating war crimes committed in Gaza, the International Criminal Court, the ICC, should consider the crime against humanity of apartheid within its current investigation in the occupied Palestinian territories. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, since the beginning of this year, at least 160 Palestinians have been assassinated by the Israeli military in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, including 51 Palestinians martyred during Israel's three-day assault on Gaza last August. Amnesty International says in its new report, 31 civilians were among the 49 Palestinians that the United Nations said were martyred in the Gaza Strip during the three-day conflict. The fighting began on 5th of August when Israeli regime launched air raids in what it said were preemptive attacks targeting the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group. The International Criminal Court at The Hague, Netherlands.